Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big political, economic and social issues in Ireland. We are the podcast of hope, the podcast that looks at alternatives to this republic of inequality. And today I am delighted to be joined by a number of people with us. We have, of course, Martin McMahon. Martin, how are you?
Not too bad, Rory. Nice to see you again.
Yes, and just to introduce myself, my head is a bit all over the place today. Rory Hearn, host of Reboot Republic, academic, author, activist and general messer. So we are discussing Airbnb today and its impact both in Ireland and globally, and the question of what impact is it having on the housing crisis and what kind of looking at the new legislation that's been introduced. But very particularly, we're going to try and go in depth to a new report that has been released by the Irish Housing Network, which is entitled A Report on the Impacts of Airbnb in Ireland. And I'm joined by two of the authors and researchers, Sasha Brown, who is doing a PhD in Maynooth University. Sasha, it's great to have you with us.
Hi, Rory.
And also by Murray Cox from the US, who is also joined us, and he is part of Inside Airbnb. Murray, it's great to have you with us. Great. And also Alicia Nealon, who is a journalist. Great to have you with us.
Hi, thanks to be here.
Great stuff. Okay, we'll get cracking and see how we go with this. Sasha, Airbnb, the report, you know, what did you find in terms of the impact of Airbnb on the housing crisis in Ireland?
So the Irish Housing Network, a network of grassroots housing groups in Ireland, wanted to know more about the impact of Airbnb in Ireland. There's been some research in Dublin, but not really any kind of research about the impact on the housing market that Airbnb has been having in the entire country. With the help of Murray Cox from Inside Airbnb, and he can talk more about Inside Airbnb. We embarked on a project to look at the impact of housing, impact of Airbnb on housing, nationwide. And
yeah.
So we looked at, all of the listings, in the entire country, of Ireland, found that essentially boiling down to Airbnb has a huge impact and, is a dominant force in the housing market, or is a major force in the housing market. Just to give a little bit of background, Airbnb, individuals can host, either their entire homes or, rooms within their homes.
And so Murray, in terms of then Airbnb, you know, how does it work and what are you seeing kind of globally across cities, in terms of Airbnb and its impact?
Thanks, Rory. As Sasha mentioned, there are different types of rentals, and the different types of rentals can impact housing. Like, for example, if an entire home is being rented out full-time in a city that has housing shortages, that can really impact the most vulnerable people that want to access housing, also first home owners. And that's something that, in particular, we're seeing. I started my project Inside Airbnb in New York City, some of the most surprising pieces of data were that the majority of listings, Airbnb listings, were entire home listings. Also, there were many hosts that had multiple entire home listings. And so New York City has a lot of housing pressure. There's a lot of displacement. Housing costs are rising. And so people that are taking entire homes off the market are really affecting the housing market. I'm now covering, collecting data on more than 100 different cities. Also countries around the world, like the US, Italy, and as of a few months ago, the Republic of Ireland. And those trends translate across the world. This is a global problem of housing, and Airbnb is contributing to it by transferring residential properties into tourist accommodation in our cities and towns and neighborhoods around the world.
And in terms of, like, what proportion of housing are you seeing being converted, because as what you refer to as kind of the complete home that's been taken or been rented out essentially on this short-term let basis, or, you know, like, what proportion of the rental market are we seeing, like, how significant is it been taken out, essentially been shifted from being a home for someone who can be rented permanently or on a long-term basis to, as you refer to, short-term lets for tourists?
Right. So I think if you think of a whole city, we're seeing Airbnb activity at about 1 or 2% of housing. That doesn't sound like a lot. But then if you consider that tourism usually intersects in certain neighborhoods, sometimes they're the most desirable neighborhoods to live in or to rent for workers or residents. And so in certain neighborhoods, you can see those numbers go up to 10 or 15% of the entire housing stock. And then you think about properties that are available for rent, and that proportion might change depending on the home ownership rates of a city. Out of the housing that's available for rent, how many of them are vacant or someone looking for an apartment? Sometimes those, as a percentage of that available, vacant and available for rent housing stock, any of these things can sometimes be multiples of that, so 150% of the available houses for rent. And we see that in some neighborhoods in New York City, in New Orleans. I've done studies like that in Australia. And Sasha can talk about some of the numbers in Ireland. But that's very concerning in neighborhoods that have a few properties available for rent. And it also speaks towards home ownership, as well as the cost of housing is rising for new homeowners as well.
And so in terms of, you know, you're seeing this similar trend in cities, not like across the States, across Europe. Like, where do you see it going? Is this like a trend that's just going to continue, or have governments intervened? We'll talk a little bit later in terms of Ireland, but what are you seeing in terms of local authorities, municipalities, local governments? Are they intervening, or is this going to continue to get worse, do you think?
Well, this problem is being repeated in 100,000 cities around the world. Fortunately, some of the cities that Airbnb were introduced early on, like San Francisco, New York, Amsterdam, Paris, London, they've come up with policies and regulations, some of which are starting to have an impact in terms of reducing the numbers back to a level that the city deems sustainable. I'll mention San Francisco because that's a very good example in the U.S. And they had gone through various styles of regulation and moved to some more effective ones. They require a permit. Entire homes can only be rented for 90 days a year. And they had that law going back, you know, 5 or 6 years, but they got very low compliance rates. Even the CEO of Airbnb, Brian Chesky, was renting out his apartment on Airbnb, and he didn't even apply for a permit, even though it was required by law. And so one of the challenges with short-term rental is that these platforms allow the tenants or the owners to post the listing. But usually the location is anonymized until the guest makes a booking, and then that the guest is given the correct address. Also, the host only uses their first name. And so what that means from an enforcement point of view is it's very difficult for the authorities to track down both the, if they see a listing on the internet, and let's say it doesn't have a permit, it's very difficult for them to match that listing with their records, with the permit records, to send inspectors around, or to identify a person that might be liable for illegal activity. And so that's one of the challenges. In the case of San Francisco, they had this period of non-compliance, and then they introduced some laws, which I'm going to call platform accountability, and I might mention that later on as well.
Okay.
So, what platform accountability means is that if the host is required to register with the city, the platforms are only able to list listings that have the required permits from the city. And so what that means is that the city can manage the compliance via that requirement that platforms must only be hosting those listings with the required. And in the case of San Francisco, once they introduced this platform accountability component of their regulation, the number of listings dropped practically overnight by half. They went from about 8,000 listings to about 4,000. And so I think that's a great example of good regulation that can limit the undesirable impacts of short-term rentals. Some other cities in the U.S. have been following suit. So Miami Beach had introduced some laws. They were challenged in court. There was just an out-of-court settlement that upheld the laws. Santa Monica in California and various other cities have been following that model. In Europe, Amsterdam, Barcelona are a good example that have also platform accountability laws, but in this current phase they're being challenged by the platforms, including Airbnb, in court. So, for example, in Barcelona, Airbnb has been responsible for listing, illegal listing, and they're being fined 600,000 euros by the European court. And they're currently, they have not paid them. That was the fines were levied 2 or 3 years ago. And they're working their way through the courts. There's also European challenges. There's a lot of lobbying that's been happening with the European Commission. And the platforms are basically claiming that they're a website that allows these hosts to publish content. And the platforms claim that that's their only responsibility, so that they can't be held liable to local laws. And that's, and I feel like that's, apart from platform compliance, that battle in the European Commission and the European courts will be key for European states in terms of having effective regulation that they can hold the hosts accountable, but also the platforms accountable to their local laws.
Because obviously Airbnb and these hosts, they, or the platforms you refer to, are essentially, are they trying to operate on a kind of a non-nation state basis and trying to avoid the local laws?
That's exactly right. They're claiming that they're just facilitating, they're just connecting the host to their potential guests, and that's the only role that they're playing. When in fact they're promoting the activity, they're lobbying government, they're giving credits to people to sign up. They're a party to the financial transaction as well. And so they have a massive stake, and they're responsible for this activity. They're also responsible for hiding the identity of the parties that are potentially breaking the law, breaking the local laws.
So yeah, so they're much more active in terms of the entire process of taking homes, you know, facilitating people to take, you know, permanent or long-term homes out of the housing system and turn them into these short-term lets. And you know, that is there, you know, do you see that as part of it, that kind of this Airbnb and other platforms and this conversion of homes in a way is turning them into commodities, that it's part of this wider financialization process that is, you know, more and more what, you know, should be homes for people are converted into these assets that make money for a very small number of people?
Well, we know this is happening already just through the regular real estate and development mechanisms. You have people buying property just for capital growth or for parking money at sometimes leaving them vacant. And I think Airbnb is aligning with that movement. Real estate investors are very savvy, and they're trying to find the best way of making money, whether it's through income or capital growth. And yeah, and I think it really speaks towards moving away from housing as a right, housing as a human right, providing housing for our most vulnerable, into housing as a commodity. And especially given the globalization of housing, you know, changing housing from a very local market where you've got supply and demand, which is really just provision of housing, homeowners, renters and investors, and then you suddenly introduce the tourism market on a global scale. And I think that's very dangerous in terms of the future of our cities.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Murray, I'm going to leave you there for a few minutes and we will come back to you. We're just going to go to Sasha now. Sasha, in terms of Ireland then, what have the findings been in terms of Airbnb and its impact in Ireland?
Yeah, so we found that Airbnb has had a major impact on the housing across the country, and really focused on the large impact in cities and towns that are known as holiday destinations.
Yeah.
So in Dublin City, but also along the west coast a lot, in Galway and other towns and cities along the coast. Just kind of in putting together metrics of how Airbnb impacts the housing market and the commercialization of housing through Airbnb, we found that entire home listings on Airbnb are really most of the postings on Airbnb. While there may be a small minority of people who are using Airbnb for its supposed intended purpose, for renting out a room while you're away, or
yeah,
if you have an extra room, using that for a short-term let, 54% of listings are for entire homes, and we can also calculate that actually that's 75% of all of the Airbnb revenue in Ireland. And there are a couple other metrics like this. We put a metric together for a commercial listing. When a listing is, when clearly for commercial purpose rather than,
Individual homeowner renting out their house, or not renting out, but like offering their house up for when they go on holidays or whatever, that the commercial is basically someone is doing this as they have a second property or a third property and are renting it out. Mm-hmm. That's what you mean by commercial basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like when somebody has two full entire homes rented,
yeah,
and they're renting out the place, an entire home for more than 90 days per year, kind of these metrics tell us things as we put together a model of how people
so what, are using what proportion Airbnb. Were you saying there was commercial?
So that's actually 73% of Airbnb revenue in Ireland comes from commercial listings.
That which is either longer than 90 days.
Yeah, longer than 90 days, more than one entire home listed out.
Yeah.
Or where a host has more than two private rooms.
Yeah.
And so that was 139 million euro from the past 12 months.
Yeah.
So this is a large,
very significant, yeah.
Yeah, this is a large amount of money impacting the housing market, and it's most of what Airbnb does as a company in this country. So another metric you can use is just when one host has more than one entire home listed. You know, logic would say that somebody doesn't have more than one home as their primary home, so they're not using this as when they're away on holiday or something like that.
Yeah.
And 45% of all entire homes that are listed are listed by a host who posts more than one home, who says, here, live in this house. I don't live here, but you can live here. And this is, again, a large amount of revenue from Airbnb. You can also find individual hosts who are drastically, you know, offending this even more. So we found 11 hosts, Airbnb hosts, who are making a revenue of over 200,000 euro a year. You know, these hosts will have different names that can't really identify them. For example, the host that has the highest revenue in Airbnb is the host only identified as Laura, who has an estimated revenue of 764,000 euro in the past 12 months.
That's incredible. That must be some house.
Yeah.
To be making that amount of money, clearly it's a lot more, and that's incredible, and no identity either.
Yeah, you can go into Inside Airbnb, Murray's website now, and see that this person has entire home listings all across the country, clearly managed by a company or some such kind of thing. But without any kind of regulation or licensing, we can't know for sure, but we know that this is in some way violating the regulations that are in place for Airbnb.
And what about the actual numbers of properties, for example, in Dublin or parts of Dublin? That they're being, you know, let on Airbnb or other platforms.
So one thing that we did too is we put together some number of houses, but we were also able to connect the data that we got from Airbnb with the 2016 census, with the number of homes that are total in, you know, totally. And so we use the local electoral areas to kind of say, and these are, you know,
yeah, the local electoral district, yeah,
yeah, it's
the
area, the, yeah, yeah,
that breaks down in terms of CSO data, yeah.
So of the 137 LEAs, we found really that there were some places where it was really bad, that, there were 8 LEAs, where entire home Airbnb listings are 3% of all homes. So that's, 1 in 30 homes would be listed on Airbnb as an entire home. And this is happening, in Dublin, but also in areas in Galway, in Kerry, in Clare, Mayo, Donegal, along the west coast, and in Galway City as well, is especially a place where this is happening.
3% of homes in an area,
but
is a
much
massive,
higher proportion of the rental stock. Like, you guys looked at private rental stock, and then in one part of Kerry, I think it was like 50% of the private rental stock was actually on Airbnb. Mm-hmm. So that means that there's no homes for people, ordinary people, to rent in that area. Now, some of those might be actual holiday homes,
yeah,
but obviously a lot of them aren't. They're just regular residential properties.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to find that it was a massive problem outside of the cities as well. That wasn't something I had thought of really before.
That in terms of, yeah, this isn't just a Dublin city or even
absolutely
Galway
not.
City,
no, it's really bad in certain parts. I've heard
people saying that around, you know, parts of the West and places like that, that people looking in towns like, you know, Ennis or Lahinch looking for housing to rent, you know, to live, and they were like everything's Airbnb. That they, this is what they were saying.
Well, this is what the guys found when they did the report, was shocking levels in certain parts of, I think, Dingle or somewhere in Kerry was definitely massive. Connemara as well. Now, again, a lot of those would be traditional holiday homes, but without proper regulation, we can't say which are which.
Which are which. And this, yeah, this is your point, that 3% of the housing stock, actually, when you look at that as a proportion of housing in the private rental, it's significantly higher.
Yeah,
it's significantly higher. And we were just talking before we came on, myself and Martin, around, you know, there's the last two years, definitely the last year anyway, there's a lot of talk in the media about private landlords. The number of private landlords has actually reduced in Ireland. And so there's this notion that landlords are fleeing the market because they're not making enough money.
Fleeing into Airbnb, probably.
Airbnb. So this actually, to a certain extent, completes that picture, that it's really, landlords aren't just selling up their properties. They're actually shifting from what we would consider providing people homes, insecure and all as they are in the private rental sector, to these short-term lets.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what the report evidenced, I think, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, definitely. If you're looking for places to rent outside of Dublin and you go to, you know, these small towns, especially in Kerry, we found places like Kenmare, Killarney, Dingle, where 50% of private rental, is entire homes, are these commercial entire homes on Airbnb. There's going to be nowhere to find to rent. Yeah.
So, Alicia, in terms of, you've written a number of articles on this for the Journal and for Dublin Inquirer. What kind of have you found, you know, both from the report and your own sort of looking into this in terms of Airbnb? What would you kind of describe the big impacts?
I suppose the most stunning thing, you just reminded me of it there when you started talking about landlords shifting from rental into this Airbnb. Like, definitely the most interesting story I've done on this was, I actually discovered a director of a homeless charity who had kicked out his own social housing tenants who he had in under RAS and converted his apartments wholesale, 14 of them, into Airbnb properties.
I saw that story.
I mean, that was just crazy. And I don't know how, it just goes to show how people obviously justify things themselves. He was a landlord and he was also director of a founder of a homeless charity and a rehabilitation charity. And, you know, he himself had done this, and his Airbnb profile contained the logo of his charity in the background. So he was in no way
hiding
this, or didn't think there was anything wrong with this. And, you know, then when I talked to him, he told me that he had actually had social housing tenants. We don't know anything about them. We don't know if they were vulnerable. Some of them might have been on disability. I just don't know. But as he said, he didn't evict anybody. He said that he didn't renew the contracts with Dublin City Council. Which ultimately meant the same thing for those people.
Absolutely.
They still had to move out of those houses, you know.
Find houses somewhere
else. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's no way of knowing what happened to them after they left those properties. And he then converted those properties into Airbnb. And I guess one of the things I think,
and obviously that's like, he's a particular example of someone who you're going, how do his morals and ethics, you know, in any way fit together what he has done? But what it is an example of is what landlords are clearly doing.
Yeah,
they
absolutely
are clearly evicting people into homelessness or into having to look somewhere else and converting their properties into short-term lets.
Absolutely, and the guys found very high level of Airbnb, commercial Airbnbs in Galway City, and Threshold told us that they have had people where that has happened to them, that they have been evicted and later discovered that, you know, the properties have been turned into short-term lets. And I think there's people disputing cases now that those evictions were illegal. The other thing about it is, it's a way of getting around the rent cap. So if somebody is, you know, like, you've got all these landlords out there that are actually playing by the rules, it's very unfair on them that somebody else can come in then and not only hike the rent, but actually get completely rid of their tenants so that no one can ever dispute the rent levels, if you know what I mean.
Well, so that in short-term lets, there's no rent caps on short-term lets.
No, exactly, exactly.
So, yeah, that's a very good point that they can get around that.
It's the ultimate way of getting around the rent cap.
Yeah. And in terms of other things then that you found?
So I suppose I've been looking into this for Dublin Inquirer for a couple of years, and it started out with key collections, a big kind of very obvious commercial operator. They're actually on booking.com and their addresses are all published on booking.com. It's a little bit less covert than Airbnb in that way. But they have signs up outside. I mean, they're very openly converting residential homes into short-term lets. And it's been a breach of planning since 2016. These new rules aren't really anything new. It's just they're more of the same kind of thing, that it's still going to be a breach of planning afterwards. Where Dublin City Council have tried to enforce against Key Collection, they haven't been able to stop the business from continuing to convert these homes in short-term let business very, very openly and very publicly. So the idea that somehow that's ever going to change with these new rules, it won't. It's still the exact same planning process. It's very hard for the council to actually enforce the law in relation to this. It takes a lot of time. They have to do it on each individual property, which is a big part of the problem. So if they discover somebody is doing multiple properties, they won't be able to go in and close down all those multiple properties together. They'll have to go to court on each individual property. They have to gather the evidence. They have to challenge the landlord. He can come back and say, well, actually, they're leased. And this has happened before in a story I covered where the landlady produced leases to Dublin City Council. And when I went and knocked on the doors, the people were like, yeah, we're here with Airbnb. So they will go to lengths to hide what they're doing as well. So it's actually very, very difficult for the council to successfully bring enforcement. And then ultimately, after they've given all the warnings and they've gone through the whole process and they get to court, the person, if it's a large scale commercial operator, can just cease doing it in that particular property, but then they can continue doing it in all their other properties. So they will never actually be fined, because it would be irrational for them to go to that stage of going to court. If they're a large scale operator, they'll just close that one flat and then they're still doing it in all their other ones.
So what, after, you know, in terms of talking to Murray there around, you know, the idea that he talks about San Francisco and the permit system and the platforms, do you think that something like that could work here?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, Murray has identified there, and that's ultimately, you absolutely have to go after the platforms. The idea that the platforms don't even tell the councils, you know, which addresses these properties are, well, I mean, no, like, you're the authority of the city. If you decide you want to know that information, you have to be able to know that information. It's very difficult for me to understand why governments are having such little success in regulating this. It's a big issue across Europe. You know, the city councils of 10 major European cities have written to the EU recently, basically begging for help with managing Airbnb. They don't seem to be able to contain this at all. It's a massive problem in cities across Europe where the city centres are really being taken over and turned into kind of short-term let, like a big oversized resort or hotel or something where local people can't live because of this phenomenon. And yeah, it's a massive issue, but it, certainly you have to have watertight regulations, and that is not what we have. So,
and we just saw there in the weekend, there was an article in the Sunday Business Post about there was proposals. I don't know the details of them. I don't know if you do, what the more stricter proposals were that have subsequently not imposed, that these regulations are a much lighter form. Do you know?
Yeah, it was a brilliant article in the Sunday Business Post. They basically have sources inside the senior civil servants have told them that they did recommend something along the lines of what Murray's talking about in San Francisco. I understand that the platforms themselves would be regulated rather than having to chase each individual host.
Yeah.
That the platform will be responsible for making sure its listings were legal and that it could then be fined if they weren't. Yeah. That's obviously the way to go. Mm. Clearly, San Francisco has tried these different methods. They've found something that kind of works. I mean, Berlin had €100,000 fines at one stage and that didn't work.
Yeah.
So it has to be at the level of the platform.
Yeah.
And that is what was recommended here, and the minister chose not, in his wisdom, to do that. So, I mean, you can draw your own conclusions from that, I think.
And did you look into that in the report, Sasha, around lobbying? Are you aware of that in terms of Ireland lobbying of politicians and why ministers would take a different view than the logical one, which is to actually go after the platforms or at least regulate them properly?
There's been extensive lobbying of specifically the Irish government and national government by Airbnb. And this really has knock-on effects because, and it's one reason that Airbnb has really focused their lobbying on the Irish government, is because Airbnb as a company in Europe is headquartered in Ireland, like many of these multinational corporations. And the national government refusing to have any kind of, real or effective regulation of Airbnb, makes for an excuse for Airbnb, against regulation attempts all across Europe, using the excuse like, oh, you know, the data is stored in Ireland and can't get access to it. Whereas effective platform compliance regulation in Ireland could really solve a lot of these kind of issues across Europe.
And in terms of that as well, were you part of the protest? There was protest down at the headquarters of Airbnb, or not you, but I know the Irish Housing Network were involved as far as I know. That, do you think that the protests have helped sort of push things on in any way? Or do you think like there's going to be, do you see more action taking place around this?
Yeah, the Irish Housing Network really has a policy of saying that Airbnb is a problem and any kind of evictions are a problem, and Airbnb has been causing loads of housing problems. And it's Irish Housing Network and its grassroots groups take a lot of different kind of ways of trying to affect change. We see these the articles that there is consideration within the government of these kind of platforms, compliance and regulations. So it should go further and should be the regulation. So,
and do you think there'll be more protests? Is the Housing Network going to continue to focus on Airbnb as a kind of focus of the campaign?
I'm not sure myself. This was part of a research project for the Irish Housing Network, but it's definitely a really a major part of any kind of housing action in Ireland has to consider that Airbnb has a major impact on housing in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah, Airbnb and the other short lets as well. Mm-hmm. Politically then, Lisha, you know, you've been covering the local authorities and the councils, and do you see much kind of move or towards, okay, the minister has clearly, they've balked on this one in terms of actually putting in place proper legislation. Do you see sort of any other pressure coming from the councils to kind of change the legislation or to strengthen it? Or
I just think it's very unfair on Dublin City Council, and they have been trying to, the staff, they have 8 planning officers for the whole of Dublin City. So there's one person basically over Dublin 1, and that's all forms of planning in Dublin 1. That's extensions, that's signage, that's everything that, you know, so there's some frustration, I'd imagine, within the council that they're to regulate this. Really, I think it wouldn't be for them to do. It would be a separate body or something at national level. You know, the councillors have been all over this issue in Dublin City Council. But they don't, the planning process just isn't the way to go. It's just not going to work. It's much too drawn out a process, and it's just the wrong way around, focusing on one property, I think. So I think there is, you know, I mean, the councils don't have any choice. They're just told by government now, you've got to go and do this. But it's a bit silly, like, and I don't see how they can do it.
So you don't see the legislation working at all to reduce?
Oh no, not at all. I don't think this is going to reduce it one bit. I think if anything, what you'll see is some home sharers who maybe their landlord doesn't know they're doing it, they might leave the market. But the big commercial entities, they're continuing to grow. I mean, property management companies are moving into Dublin as we speak. Large scale property management companies are still coming here, so they're not afraid of the regulations.
Property management companies
for short term lets.
That was actually something I was thinking about there in terms of the research as well, that Airbnb is obviously only one platform. There's lots of others, and you're saying these property management companies. So overall, what is short term lets, or do we have any sense what are short term lets as a proportion of the housing market? Or was that 3% you were talking about? Was that...
That was just Airbnb. Yeah. So there's more.
So in terms of what would we... Do we have any sense of it?
No, I don't think the Irish government would either, based on the information that we think that they have.
No, they have no idea.
Murray, I don't know if you got that. Do you have any sense of that in terms of, okay, Airbnb have a certain percentage of the markets, but overall, in terms of, because there's lots of other companies and platforms doing this, you know, what proportion of the rental markets do you think are short-term lets or being converted?
Well, I think that there's sometimes overlap between the platforms, hosting on multiple platforms. Ironically, that's some of the ways that they get around these 90-day caps, like, for example, in London, where they're posting on multiple platforms. I mean, I would suggest, based on the multiple platform activity I see in other cities, that the number could be even double what we're seeing with Airbnb.
Wow.
So the report that the Irish Housing Network worked on was a conservative, just one platform, and so the problem is much worse than the data that was in that report.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you've had a chance to look at or if you've been following the legislation that was proposed here in Ireland. If you have, do you see that working? The guys here don't think so. Alicia and Sasha don't see it having any impact. And have you looked at it?
Yeah, I had, and that was one of the reasons for me wanting to work on the report. We heard what regulations were going to be. I felt, just based on my experience working with cities around the world, that they would be ineffective. And it's frustrating because, given that there are good examples of better regulation, and now that we find out that they were even considering, they had drafted up these stricter regulations, and to find that the ones that were introduced were the ones that we have now in Ireland, or the ones that you have, that I predict will probably, you might get 10 or 20% compliance at the most. And so it's really just a waste of time.
Yeah.
And you're continuing you're allowing these negative impacts to continue, impacting residents of the city. And unless the city responds quickly, you're looking at something like 1 or 2 years down the road that you might be able to address some of these issues. And I think that's really frustrating and concerning, given that there's information there would have been information out there that the proposed regulations were going to be ineffective, and they were going to put a lot of the onus on inspections or complaints and a lot of the work on the councils. And there could have been a completely different approach.
Yeah. And in terms of the lobbying by Airbnb, I imagine Airbnb aren't big fans of yourselves.
No, they're not.
Do you have much interaction with them?
I had a meeting with one of their press officers and one of their policy people earlier this year. They in my day job, I work in a building in a financial district in Manhattan on the top floor, and Airbnb happens to have the floor beneath me. So I bumped into the elevator with this press officer. I bumped into her once, had some awkward conversations. But yeah, they continually try to discredit any type of criticism. From my point of view, I provide data, which you would think would be objective, data which is obtained directly from the Airbnb website.
Yeah.
I try to be very responsible, even though I'm an activist and I'm promoting my opinions and advocacy. I take the provision of the data very seriously. I've been doing it for 4 or 5 years, and cities, journalists, researchers use my data every day. But Airbnb basically just says that it's inaccurate, therefore you have to rely on what we're saying. A lot of what they're saying is really anecdotal. It talks about how people can stay in their homes by using Airbnb, and it helps people to earn a few extra dollars or euros, but that's not the reality. And so Airbnb's fighting very hard. Sasha mentioned the lobbying they're doing in the Irish government, but there are corporate watchdogs that are tracking them in the European Commission as well. So either that them or some of their lobbyists are really meeting with the commissioners, the European commissioners, and committees multiple times. They're spending money there, and they're trying to water down any type of law which might allow the member states of Europe to enforce their local laws. So I think that's really important in terms of getting these national laws right, but also potentially there might need to be some lobbying done by housing advocates and the cities themselves. At the European level, in order to make sure that they're able to enforce their own law.
And what could you see the EU doing?
I mean, there could be rulings that just make it very clear that Airbnb is an actor, and other platforms are actors that when the cities or nations introduce these platform accountability laws, that they're able to be held accountable. They can't escape their responsibility by claiming that they're an intermediary. Intermediary that's kind of hands off, and so I think that's really important.
Very good. Okay, Sasha, in terms of the kind of where you see, does the Irish Housing Network have kind of next steps planned around this, or do you think in terms of, you know, where this is going to go, do we see, is Dublin going to, and other, you know, kind of cities around Ireland going to be hollowed out by these short-term lets, or do you think people are going to stand up?
I think this is a really powerful kind of issue to mobilize around in the housing movement and to fight back against the housing crisis and the government policies. And I think it's one of kind of many policies, and the grassroots groups and the Irish Housing Network work in a lot of different ways. But also what we're going to be doing to continue on from this report is to create kind of reports, more detailed reports on the impact of Airbnb on housing in individual cities and regions in Ireland. We've identified Galway City, for example, as a place where this is really having a large impact on housing, on rental, on public housing, for individuals, for kind of driving evictions and all these kind of things. So we do plan on creating more resources for grassroots groups and to mobilize, and also against to mobilize towards their local politicians to say this is a real and large issue in your community and there needs to be something done about it. So there is kind of, I think, after this regulation came in, there's kind of, the issue has been put in the plate of local councillors. And I think, that there can be, some pushback to say that this is something that has to be done at the national level. So, I think that's something that you will see. And I look forward to working on that, certainly.
Great. Alicia, then, in terms of, where you see this kind of the debate in the media, do you think the kind of sense is that, oh, the regulation, you know, the Airbnb issue is to a certain extent addressed and the legislation has been introduced? Or do you think, how do you see the media debate around this? Like, how much has it engaged with the findings of the report? And
yeah, it's kind of disappointing that some of the local journalists didn't pick up on the specifics of the report. I thought it would have been a good story that anyone could have done in any county, a local, good local story, now that we have such incredible data. And it's going to be certainly helpful for journalists going forward that that resource exists now. I think there's two sides to the media coverage. Obviously, there was that brilliant article in the Sunday Business Post on Sunday where the journalist had gotten inside information on. And I think one of the things that had been recommended was that platforms could even be banned if they didn't comply.
Yeah.
So it was certainly, there were senior civil servants pushing for a really proper regulation of this sector. And it's very interesting that it's interesting to me that the Housing Committee went for it. I don't know why they agreed to something that's already failed for 3 years since 2016. I don't know why they agreed to that. But they did. And these are the regulations that we have. Ultimately, I think they'll be tweaked. They'll be changed eventually. But we're so far behind the rest of Europe in even attempting to come to the point of trying to regulate this, that we're definitely way behind the curve, and these regulations are part of that. I think the media coverage is pretty much split between, there are a lot of journalists that are very interested in this, actually.
Yeah.
You know, people always say to me, oh, that was a good story and that's interesting and stuff like that. There is a lot of interest in it. And then there's also, I guess, you know, and I remember chatting to Murray, you know, the first time I spoke to him, and saying, you know, like, I think a lot of people still are maybe where I used to be with Airbnb. Like, I used to think Airbnb was great. Oh, wow, this is class. You know, you put your house up when you go on holidays. Yeah. You can rent somebody else's gaff when you go away. And it's so cool and quirky. And I remember staying in one house over in Brighton, and there was rabbits and all this running around. We were like, this is so cool. We loved Airbnb at the beginning, you know. And I've used it as a host. I've used it as a guest. And I think some people are still in that place where they haven't seen that this is like, you know, McDonald's pretending to be an organic restaurant or something. I don't know. Like, it's because it's so contradictory as well, though, I think that's why it's interesting. Because they have this public image where it's like, you know, we're this, you know, amazing house sharing platform, and it's like really hippie and cool. And, you know, then when you delve down into it, you know, this is a serious corporation that's causing mass disruption to the housing, to housing for people, for residents all over the world. And they're caught in all these conflicts with local authorities. You know, they're in court in New York. They're in court in so many cities, and it's so difficult to regulate. And, but I guess what's really interesting, I think, is the fundamental clash between their branded image of themselves and the reality of what they do. So I do think there is an interest. I think journalists are interested in Airbnb, actually.
And it's not going to go away anytime soon.
No.
Murray, to finish up, where do you see it going? Are we, Do you think that we will get sufficient regulation to avoid the complete destruction of our cities by our inner cities by these kind of short term lets and the destruction of community that I know yourself and others have talked about as well? Or what? Where do you see it?
I think we have to have hope and faith. I think cities will fight back. And I think we're seeing that as cities are slowly moving towards better and more effective regulation. And so I think that's just something that we have to advocate for and watch. And I think a few different points. I'm collecting data monthly for the Republic of Ireland, so we'll start to be able to track since the regulations have gone into effect, whether there's been any change. And we should be able to compare it to how many notifications or permits in each for each planning authority, so we can start to paint a story of a quantitative story,
yeah,
of the effectiveness of the regulations. I mean, from a European point of view, Leisha mentioned the 10 cities that had written to the European Commission about the right to housing, but there's also other movements. There's the Sharing Cities Action Group, where there's task force, where cities are joining together to share information about regulation, how they're using data, how enforcement is happening, also how to negotiate potentially with the platforms, and also what are some of the key barriers. I'm involved in a project right now where we're surveying 60 different cities with the Open University of Catalonia, and we're really doing it's probably one of the largest studies of regulation and use of data that's been done so far. And so I think even that information, that we're talking to the city administrators and figuring out what they need to move their laws forward, either on their own or together. So I think that's positive and encouraging as well.
Great. Murray, thank you so much for joining us. And I was struck there, a thought at the very end. Of course, part of the reason why this is such a crisis is because so many people are now reliant on the private rental sector that in the past would have either been able to own a home or would have got council housing traditionally or affordable cost rental, that it also shows the need to build public affordable housing for everybody, really, as well, I think. Right. But Martin, you want to come in?
Yeah, regulations that don't work. Where have we seen that before? Pretty much anything else that has tried to be regulated in this country. You know, this isn't a new game. This is an old game rehashed for a new platform. I love the idea that they can go after the platform. Plenty of platforms out there, not just Airbnb, that disavow responsibility for what they do. And it's about time that the algorithms were taken into hand. You know, it is definitely about time. Mm. Look, the tortoiseshack.ie survives on patrons only. So please come on to tortoiseshack.ie, sign up as a patron. The more patrons we get, the more of these excellent pods we can do. And thank you, everybody, for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks Sasha. Thanks, Leisha. Thanks, Murray.